Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand.Life show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome back to the Your Living Brand.Live show. This is Ben Baker. Welcome to another episode, ladies and gentlemen. We are having another great week. You know, I love that all of you guys send me emails. You send me them to ben@yourbrandmarketing.com, that you subscribe on your favorite channel. We're everywhere. We're at iTunes, Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, you name it. Wherever you listen to your different podcasts, we're usually there. And if there's a place that you listen and we're not there, let me know and I'll add it. You know, we try to be everywhere, but you know what? There's so many of these things just popping up all over the place that it's really simple for us to add on wherever we find it. But you know what? This show is about you. The show is about finding out, how do we help you? How do we help you communicate better? How do we help you add value to your audience and get people to know, like, and trust you? So every week we bring on another guest. And this week I have Paul Higgins coming all the way from Australia from Build, Live, Give. So Paul, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Ben. Thanks for having me.
It's great having you on the show. I mean, you and I have been talking, it seems like a couple of years now. You and I have been in the same circles and seen each other on LinkedIn and Twitter and wherever. And it's nice to finally have you on the show because I love what you're doing. I think you help a lot of people. You've come up with a really simple, engaging, and valuable program. And I want people to know a little bit about it. So let's get into that. You ready?
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. So tell me a little bit about Build, Live, Give. Like, what was the impetus that said, I got to start this program. I got to start this company. You know, a little bit about where you are today, and then we'll eventually get where you're going and the people that you serve.
Yeah. So for all my sins, I worked for Coca-Cola for 18 years, and my father actually worked there, and I was told I'd never get a job there. Did uni, et cetera. And then they got desperate. They sent me threw me a set of keys, and 18 years later, I was still there. So, you know, I had a brilliant career. It was an amazing company to work for. You know, 128 years old. It's made Warren Buffett third wealthiest man in the world. So it was an incredible company. But my nephrologist, my kidney specialist, I got an inherited condition, said, look, this is around 2011, said, you got two choices. Stay working for one of the best companies in the world or live to see your grandchildren. Which one do you want to do? And I'm like, obviously, the latter. So, yeah, in 2011, I left. I did some coaching. I did some consultancy and, yeah, just sort of managed my health. I got to say, almost 12 months ago, I got a brand new kidney from a best mate and things couldn't be better. So that's sort of a little bit about my backstory.
That's phenomenal. And I want to get into that. Before we get into the Build, Live, Give, I want to get into 18 years at Coca-Cola. 18 years anywhere in today's world is almost unheard of. The fact that you started as a young man right out of university and build into the company, and I'm sure you probably had a pretty interesting career within the company, but what are the things that you felt that kept you there over the years? Because that's important. Starting with a company and working for a company is one thing. Staying with a company for 18 years, there had to have been certain things that enticed you to stay, that that made you feel that you were wanted and needed, because you said you didn't think you were ever going to get a job there. So what kept you there, and what were the things that you learned along the way?
Yeah, so Coca-Cola, the great thing is that it made lots of profit. So it was an incredibly profitable business. So what that meant is that they could pay the best people in the world to help them. We'd get whether it's someone from Stanford, from Harvard, like you're always having some of the most intelligent people in the world educating you on how to be a better business person. So I think that was enormously beneficial. I'm a very curious person by nature. I love to learn, and they just constantly trained and developed you. So that was absolutely brilliant. The other thing is that what I love about the Coca-Cola company is that it's end-to-end. So one day you'd be with the global CEO talking about a 20-year strategy for the company. That exact afternoon, you'd be out facing bottles up in a little cafe. So it was a brilliant way to stay. They used to say, think global, act local. So it was from, we are a global business, which I loved, which, you know, now I suppose the world has sort of caught up with that, but they were one of the first true global businesses. And it was also very practical. So, you know, you could sit, strategize, and you'd see the implementation, which was quite a unique blend. And the last thing is they kept giving me roles, in particular, that I was an entrepreneur. So they would say, look, Paul, we've got hotels, restaurants, cafes. We need to improve our brand. Our brand's disappeared. So go on a month tour around the world, pick best practice, then come back. We'll give you all the money you need to implement it. So it was like you're running your own business with the support of the giant backing of Coca-Cola. So to be honest, it was just those opportunities that just kept popping up. I completely changed the juice market here in Australia. I just had these amazing opportunities. And also you learnt from some of the best companies in the world, because you had, you know, you go and spend time with Walmart, you'd go and spend time with McDonald's. Like, you're always looking at the best companies in their market as well that you're learning from. So it was a great experience. And to be honest, I could see the writing on the wall around their results, because, you know, sugar became a bigger issue. But yeah, I don't think I would have left as soon as I did if it wasn't for my condition.
Right. But that's interesting. I want to reach out on that entrepreneur type philosophy, because that's an amazing thing. The fact that not only did they train you and support you, but they also sat there and said, look, we want our people to learn from other organizations and to go out there and find the best practices. And we trust you. We're going to send you on this learning tour. We're going to get you to find the best insights. We're going to get you to extrapolate of what's happening out in the market and be able to build those best practices into the future of this company. I mean, those are amazing qualities that you really don't see in a lot of organizations. There are so many organizations that are thinking of the next, you know, the end of the week, the end of the month, the end of the quarter, but that tends to be about it. They're not thinking 5, 10, as you said, 20 years out. So did you find that that allowed you to be able to move, you know, because of your health and this? What were the lessons that you took out of that, that when you went out on your own, it made you a better entrepreneur and it made you able to be able to start where you are today?
Yeah, look, I think the first thing is really understand the consumer, the customer, right? So the Coke company, and I was privy to, you know, what Nike and other companies did from a customer research point of view, but the Coke company were brilliant at it. You know, they always started with what is the pain point that the customer is dealing with, or the consumer in their speak, what are they dealing with? And then we'll go find a product to solve it. Right. So often I see people, you know, build it and then hope they will come. Whereas the Coke
the
company
field of dreams.
Spot on. The Coke company is really ingrained into you to say, no, you've got to do your research. You've really got to understand the consumer. And then you make the product. So I think that was a perfect thing for running my own business. I'm not saying I always did it, but I at least knew what I did wrong. So that was brilliant. I think the other one is just the sales training that you had was sensational, right? So they really believed in, if you improve the customer's business, you were dragged along. So it was very much so. Even back in the early 2000s, we were taking all the data of major food service companies and actually mining all their data and working out how they could make more profit as a total business. Because we knew if they made more profit, we'd sell more. But also we knew they wouldn't come and ask for a price discount because they'd already met their profit targets. So this is stuff we're talking about, well, now, 20 years ago, right? So they were just so far ahead of the curve on things like that. And once again, because we had the best experts. So for me, really sitting on the customer's side and what does my client really want to achieve, not just from a business perspective, but also personally, what do they want to achieve, was another great lesson that the Coke company taught me, which is, you know, held really well for being my own business.
Yeah. And that's such a great lesson that every young entrepreneur, actually every entrepreneur has got to live, because there's so many people that say, I've got this great idea. I have this absolute wonderful idea. My mom thinks it's a wonderful job. I'm going to go out and build it. I'm going to spend all this money. I'm going to create whatever solution it is. And then they go out to the market and realize that what they built isn't what the market needs. So it's amazing to me that Coca-Cola, well, it shouldn't be amazing to me, because that's why they're a multi-trillion dollar company and you and I aren't, is that their thought process is first is, what does the customer need? What does the customer really need? What do they want? What do they desire? Where are their pain points? What's frustrating them? And then let's go out and solve those problems. I love that philosophy. And I think that that's something that needs to be hammered over and over again into people, that this build it and they will come mentality just is not realistic. You have to look at who's your audience and what do they truly need?
Yeah. And I think the other thing that backed that up is data. Like, I think the Coke company we had, because we effectively, for a lot of our business, we sold to each individual outlet and we had all of the sales history. We used data, and that having clean data and using that data to make better decisions. Like, you know, any decision I went to make, yes, I had my gut intuition, but I'd go to my analysts and say, okay, come back to me and either prove or disprove this hypothesis on this decision I'm about to make. So using that data, and I know now with AI and, you know, the use of data is becoming very topical now. But once again, the Coke company was sort of real key leaders in that space. And I see so many business people, their gut is, I think, a starting point, but it shouldn't be the end point, right?
No,
so
I agree.
You need some data to actually prove or disprove that based on fact. And if you don't have the right data points and the right clean data, well, then that's going to make it very hard.
Well, and let's get into that, because it's not just the data, it's the interpretation of data, and it's asking the right questions to get the right data. You know, that's where it is a lot of people collect data on everything, but they're not asking the right questions and they're not interpreting the information. So therefore, their decisions are really confused. But I think that what you're saying is, if you look at the data and you ask it, what is it really telling us, and be able to interpret that against your gut reaction and against what you're seeing in the marketplace, it allows you to make a far more intelligent decision. Am I right?
Yeah, look, yes. And I think the other thing, which I learned at the Coke company too, is not to go too far the other way, which, you know, you don't trust any of your gut decision and you're only based on the data, because some things, you know, aren't in just, you know, the patterns in the data aren't always accurate. So I think it is a blend. But I completely agree, and I think using that helps, and especially for a lot of mid-market. Like, it used to only be available for people that were at the top of the market, like a Coca-Cola, but now it's available, you know, in mid-market right down through. So, you know, that's the great thing with technology these days. It's very accessible. SaaS, now software as a service, has completely changed the game. You know, what, and often I find smaller companies are actually quicker at and faster to market to adopt technology, because they don't have the big legacy systems that some of the large guys do.
That's right. That's important, is be able to be nimble with that data. Because you're right. I mean, you don't need a supercomputer to be able to analyze, unless you're the size of a Coca-Cola or a Visa or a Nike or something like that, where you're, I mean, millions and millions and millions of data points that you're looking at. But the average company, what are you looking at? 10,000 data points? 50,000 data points. It's, you know, you could almost run it on an Excel spreadsheet or Microsoft Access. For most companies out there, the amount of data that you're analyzing is enough to get intelligent information, but it's not so big that it's going to cost you millions and millions and millions of dollars to interpret it. So it's a brave new world.
Yeah. And look, a great example of that is like LinkedIn. You know, I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn and helping people with LinkedIn. And, you know, there's a product called ShieldApp.ai. And what it does, it's like Google Analytics for your LinkedIn. So it actually gives you all the data. So you can go back through over the last 10, 12 months and work out which were your best posts. Why did you get certain engagements? So it's a very low cost item that can actually be added to a platform like LinkedIn to give you incredible information. So there's lots of those tools out there that people can use, rather than just saying, God, I'm not happy with my results, and just keep repeating that. The Coke company taught me always, well, you've got to grow. Like, we constantly have to grow our profits. And the way that we do that is constantly get better and using that data to make better decisions for us and also our consumer and customers.
So it's, I'm not happy with my results. Okay, what can I do differently to change this? Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies need to be able to sit there and say, what's the line in the sand? Where are we today versus where do we want to go? And then build that roadmap. But unless you've got the right data, unless you understand what's holding you back, what's your Achilles heel, whatever you want to call it, it's very difficult for you to get a point to move forward. So I love that. What's the name of that software again?
Yeah, so it's Shield. So S-H-I-E-L-D-A-P-P, shieldapp.ai.
Perfect. We'll put that in the show notes. That's a real valuable one. That's one I didn't even know about. I think we're going to have to add that to the show notes. And I think it might be the next purchase that I make, because having the ability to take a look and sit there and go, okay, where were you the last 12 months? You know, which were the posts that were successful? And be able to look at it and sit there and say, okay, why were you successful? Why did these posts take off? I mean, I've got one post that I did that was 250,000, you know, views. I've never had that, you know, before. I may never have it again, but it was really interesting diving into it and trying to figure out, okay, what made this thing go absolutely viral?
What was that been?
It was a couple of key people that just resonated with and shared it. You know, just key people with very large communities all over the world that just happened to see this. It was the right time of day. It was the right thing that hit people on their inbox at the right time. They shared it, they reshared it, and this thing just snowballed. You know, and it was just one of those things where I don't think it was anything to do with the actual article itself, because if I remember correctly, it was a leadership article. It was not that much different from anything else that I've ever written. It just happened to resonate. And those things were just one of those things. It was lightning. It was lightning in a bottle. I mean, I've had lots of posts that I've had 8,000, 10,000, 15,000 views, but to have 250,000 views, an amazing thing.
We had one of the ladies in our group that had 500,000 views, and she literally, before she joined our group, was lucky to get 1,500 views. So it was an outlier. Yeah, for her, that made a significant difference to her business. I think it is around that. Now, how do you get the consistency? You'll always get the outliers, but how do you get those consistent views? And there is a certain way to guarantee that you're going to get that, so that the bell curve is a lot tighter. And you'll always have the outliers, but what you'll never have is the really low view posts.
Well, let's get into that, because that's your business. I mean, that's with these LinkedIn groups and the different things that you're doing, that's what you're helping people do right now, is to help them build their business more effectively on LinkedIn. So let's get into exactly what do you do, how do you do it, and what differentiates you from everybody else that's out there purporting systems on LinkedIn, because God knows there's enough of them.
Yeah, spot on. It's like the old saying, everyone has a bum. It's a little bit like that with LinkedIn. Everyone's got a different opinion. But for me, so in March 2019, I'd had my kidney transplant. The doctors, in the first time in almost 10 years, said to me, you're okay, right? Because up until that point, like in November 2018, I almost passed away. I had a very bad experience with an operation. And going to the transplant, I was really nervous. I was doing well. I worked right through hospital because I'd set up my business to work from hospital. So that was fine, but I hadn't really marketed myself. So the doctor said green light. And my first thought was, what do I do? Like, Ben, I was petrified. I was like, hang on, I can't use my health as an excuse here. I've actually got to get off my bum and do something. So I basically joined a little local group, and they helped me a little bit on LinkedIn, because I knew that LinkedIn's my thing. I love it. I've always been on it. I'm a relationship guy. I got okay results, but then I just said, you know what? I've just got to step it up. I've got to remember what I learned at Coke. So it was go get the best people in the world and learn from them. So I just went and paid significant amount of money to get the best people in the world to tell me what should I do. Three people told me different things. I went out, practiced and iterated, and all of a sudden, I was getting views for the first time in my business. People were coming to me. So I got 640,000 views in 10 months, which wow, led to 112 new clients. Like, this is, I could nearly say for my 8 years in business, that was about the amount of new clients. It wasn't quite that, but it was like just an extraordinary year. And at a time when I'd had a few challenging years with my health, it was just like a godsend. So what was that? I think it was Remington that used to say, you know, I enjoyed the shaver that much, I went and bought the company. It was a little bit like that, that all I wanted was to solve my own problem. And then people kept saying to me, because I, you know, my core business is still mentoring business owners, and they come and say to me, look, no one's fine. I can't be seen on LinkedIn or on any social platform. No one's reaching out to me. I can't get any leads. I'm like, well, you know what? I'm getting a little success over here. Maybe you should try it. And then the snowball sort of gone from there.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. The YourBrandMarketing.live podcast is sponsored by How to Retain Employees Through Leadership online course. Go to courses.yourbrandmarketing.com. That's courses.yourbrandmarketing.com and put in Your Living Brand 50 for a $50 coupon. Thanks a lot. Welcome back to the YourLivingBrand.live show. I think that necessity is the mother of invention. It truly and absolutely is, where we find ourselves in a corner somewhere and we go, okay, this isn't working. What do I do now? You absolutely had that epiphany moment where you sit there going, okay, I don't have the excuse of the kidney transplant anymore. I got my health back. I have a life to live. Oh my God, I probably have another 40 more years of living. I better make some money. I better get some clients to move forward to be able to sit there and say, all right, how do I do this? How can I do it in a way that's meaningful to me? How do I do this in a way that is going to build the type of lifestyle that I want and be able to do it? And you build something specifically for yourself, but you realize that it was working for yourself and then it started working for others. It's an interesting thing that you need to sit there and say, okay, how did you move from getting to a point where all of a sudden other people are realizing that they should be paying you to be part of this, to be able to learn what you already were learning from others?
Yeah, and look, and I tried other things during that time. So I still to this day don't understand how, but my Facebook account, I hadn't done any ads for 3 years. We go to set up just to do an ad and it got banned, right? I'm like, so, and there was no reason for it. You can't talk to anybody. It was just so, you know, I was all ready to do Facebook ads, gone. Then I did some LinkedIn outreach, which was good, but I was doing it myself and I was just getting no replies. So that's when I realized, go back to my Coke lessons, which was, you've really got to give value first, right? And so what I said is, well, the value I can give is posting great content on LinkedIn. And if people like it, then that will lead them to be more engaged with me. So, you know, whether it's 37, 40, I don't know how many touch points these days we're up to make someone buy, but if only 3% of people are ready to buy at any particular time, how are you giving value and nurturing them through that process? And I think for me, LinkedIn for B2B at the moment, doing great content on LinkedIn, I think is one of the best ways. Even I think Gary Vee was quoted last year as saying, you know, if you're not, you have to be on LinkedIn. If you're a B2B marketer, it's just the place to be.
Yeah, it's true, because all I do is B2B marketing. It's all I do. I am seriously considering dropping my Facebook account. I have a Facebook account. I'm almost never on it anymore. I find that it's just not a medium that works for me, because it's not where I am and it's not where my customers are. So we really need to understand who we are, what we're about, what's important to us, and more importantly, where our customers are. And obviously, the people that you are looking to influence were on LinkedIn and are on LinkedIn. So the question is, how did you go from that point of saying, it says, okay, we're going to start engaging with people. We're going to start building things out like that. And all of a sudden you start getting 650,000 views. You start getting a bunch of people that are engaging with you. How did you convert that into a process where you were helping other people do the same thing and be successful with it? How did you take it from a built for you type of solution to a built for other people and helping them achieve their goals?
Yeah. So what I worked out is there's three key things. There's a first one is you got to get the views, right? The second is then you got to get people engage on your posts. And most important, your ideal clients to engage on the post. And then the third thing is the relationship. How do you follow up? How do you build that relationship? So on the views, I quickly learned that it wasn't a solo sport. right? It's just not a solo sport. You need, I call it the 50-20-60 formula. You need 50 likes, 20 comments in the first hour, or your post is hardly going to go anywhere. Now, it doesn't matter how good of a person you are to try to coordinate 50 people to like or 20 people to comment on your post in the first hour is pretty difficult, right? So I quickly realized that you need a support group. So that's when I went and through a lot of hard work, I convinced 30 people to let's get together and help each other, right? So that was the first point to get the views sorted. And instantly people went from, you know, 200 views a post to 2,500 just by following that formula. And we use a little bit of tech now to help with the likes, so it's not as manual. But the other thing that people started to realize is, you know what, I'm actually learning a lot from reading these other people's posts as well. So it was like it became a knowledge, plus you're also adding value to others. And the other great thing is an accountability, because it's so easy, you know, not to do sales or marketing. And you know that. You know, have lots of clients that, you know, get so stuck in delivery that don't do that. So it was a great way to say, well, actually by contributing and turning up every day to help others, I actually am helping myself because I'm doing what I'm meant to do. So that was sort of the first golden moment that happened from me doing well as an individual to making sure that I helped others, but it was also helping me.
Right. It's interesting because with these circles of people, you said there's about 30 people in each group.
Yeah.
Roughly 30 people in each group. And you've got groups in different time zones, I guess, around the world. So if I'm in Canada and you're in Australia, I'm probably going to be part of a group that's going to be on a North American time, not on Australian time, correct?
Spot on. Yes.
Perfect. Now, the key thing that you said is within the first hour. The thing is, so do you have a dedicated time of the day of, you know, that you find that says, okay, everybody posts at this period of time, everybody has to read each other's articles and deal with everybody else over this period of time as well. Is that what it is? Is that, okay, between 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock in the morning on this time zone, we're all going to post and we're all going to comment on each other?
Yes, spot on. So for the US, Canada time zone, it's 7 a.m. Pacific. So it's 7 a.m. Pacific, you know, 10 a.m. Eastern time. You basically post, and the closer you get to the 7, because yes, you want in the hour, but the software we use, the closer you post to 7 a.m., the more likes you're going to get. So, yep, it's a dedicated time, and people don't have to post every day of the week. So some people, you know, the minimum I say is 3 times. So it's not hugely time intensive. The other thing is not all 30 people are going to post on a particular day. We run 30 to get the minimum, but all you really need, if you get 15, well, to get the 20 comments, you only really need 15 for the group, and then other people will comment in the first hour. So, but that's, yes, having that discipline around it, it makes all the difference how the algorithm works.
So my question to you is say there's 15 people. I know for me to read 15 articles and be able to write a, you know, write a comment that's meaningful. I mean, it's easy to hit the like button, but to write a meaningful comment and think about it times 15 is 3 to 5 minutes per article. So you really need to be able to sit there and say, okay, I'm going to dedicate this hour of a day, 5 days a week or 3 days a week or whatever you're going to dedicate yourself with. You really need to block off that period of time to realize this is my marketing time on LinkedIn.
True. So what we say is for most people, it takes 30 minutes to write the content. Now, some people batch it, whatever. We give a great format on how to do it, and we tell you how to create ideas, and also we make it easy. But let's say it's 30 minutes. Now, remember, we're only doing posts, not articles.
Okay. Right?
So a post is only 200 words, roughly. So what we say is it should take you between a minute and a minute and a half to read the post and comment, right? So therefore, at worst case scenario, you might be spending another 15 minutes. So it's 45 minutes. And that 45 minutes is probably 3 times a week as an example.
Okay. So you're not getting people that are doing the 1,299 characters and linking to an article that's 10 minutes long to read. You're thinking about everybody creating short, pithy posts that are insightful, tell a specific story and create a certain amount of value, but they're easy to read and easy to digest and easy to respond to.
Correct. And what we've got is in the engagement, so, you know, that's the trigger, the views, and then the engagement is to get your ideal clients. We've got 7 key steps. And what we do is make sure that those 7 key steps people are following to get the structure right. And that also makes it easy there to comment, because always have a question. You know, listening now, always make sure you have a question, because a comment is worth twice a like on LinkedIn.
Sure.
And the other thing is, if someone comments on your post, then you can go and thank them. So you can comment back, but you can also direct message them and refer to that comment. So you're not going in cold anymore. You're actually going in warm, because they've already read your post. They've probably looked at your profile, so they already know about you.
Yeah, and that's what the key thing is the engagement. Because you're right. I mean, when people comment on my post, I look at that as far more valuable as than the people who just hit the like button. I appreciate the people who hit the like button. It's nice. They looked at the article. They thought it was nice. They hit the like button. Now in LinkedIn, you have five or six different choices, which is great. But people that actually take the time to write those 10, 15, 20, 30, 50 words that are insightful, that have meaning, that start those conversations. And I think that's the key thing. It's the conversations that we're trying to start that actually builds the relationships. That's where the know, like, trust comes out of. That's where you actually build relationships with people.
Correct. And, you know, going back to Coke, you know, the old saying, I'm sure you've heard it many times, you know, 50% of your marketing works, you just don't know what 50. Coke was a similar thing. Like, they constantly marketed. People said, well, you're the biggest well-known brand in the world. Why are you continuing to invest 10% of your revenue into marketing every year? They're like, well, we've got to always stay top of mind. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit like this. You've got to stay top of mind with your existing clients. Like, your existing clients want to get constant value from you, not just from the one-on-one sessions. Clients that are in your pipeline want to know that you're adding value. So, you know, being that authority and being really known for something is so important, and getting good engaging comments behind it certainly helps.
And not only that, but you become a thought leader. You become somebody that's actually offering ideas and solutions and things for people to think at. Somebody told me that I think it's less than 5% of the people on LinkedIn or any social media platform are actually creating original content.
Mm.
The amount of original content that's being created of the 400 million people or how many ever people are on LinkedIn, only 5% of those people are actually creating original content. There's a lot more people that are sitting there and grabbing something and sharing it out, but actually creating something that's personal and on their own. It's a very small percentage. So when you're doing that, you're setting yourself apart from your competition.
Yeah, and it helps you because you are being really clear, because I think the classic example for most of us, and I've been through it, is trying to market to everyone. So I think your LinkedIn profile, but, you know, most people today, if I search your name, your LinkedIn profile will come up on Google before anything else. You know, so yes, a website's important, but just think the last time you went and actually met or spoke to somebody that you didn't look at their LinkedIn profile first. It's really powerful. And if you've got a great profile, and I can give a download at the end, mention one for how to improve your profile. But if you've got a great profile, they see that you've got posts that are active. It's just building that social trust in an area at the moment where, unfortunately, like you said, there's a lot of people out there that are using social media in the way that it was never really intended.
Yeah. Most people on social media today just look. They're gazers. They read stuff. They look at stuff. They don't post. They don't comment. They don't like. They don't do any of that sort of thing. They just read information. They're gatherers of information. And you never know who those people are, because there are people that have told me, you know what, Ben, I started reading your stuff 2 years ago. And all of a sudden they start calling me and they said, you know what, I've been reading your stuff for 2 years now, and I'd really like you to come in our office and do some training for our people. Perfect. I had no idea this person even existed, because they didn't engage with me in any way, shape, or form. I didn't know they were happening, but they were reading my posts on a very regular basis. They were telling other people about it, but they weren't sharing it. They were copying the link and sending somebody an email and saying, here, you should look at this. They didn't want to be seen as sharing it within LinkedIn. So different people have different thought processes of how they're going to use social media. I'm not sure there's a right way. I'm not sure there's a right wrong way. There's a right way for you. And I think that the key thing we have to look at is who is our audience? My audience is certainly not the 400 million people there are on LinkedIn. My audience is very specific. I'm looking for senior executives in HR operations and sales. Those are the people that I talk to on a very regular basis, the CEOs, the founders, Those are the people that I talk to on a regular basis. And if we can put our comment that is sniper attacked at the people that we're trying to communicate with and build relationships with, it's going to resonate with them far better.
Yeah, look, I totally agree. And, you know, so, you know, you've got the views, you've done the engagement. Then the next one is, you know, how do you build that relationship? And I think you just spoke and articulated that really well. But for me, how often do you get someone connect with you and then they just send you a sales pitch the next time? And like you said, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's a high percentage, right?
Yeah.
And I'm lucky I've got a VA that will just delete those ones, but not everyone's got that. So what we do is go through, we've got scripts that we definitely know that work that you can customize. Because we've been doing it for so long and now we've got so many people, we know what works. But the greatest gift I could give anyone is the hot potato. So does that translate into Canada when I say the hot potato, Ben?
No, you're going to have to explain it.
So think of it, if you're at a barbecue and you've got a hot potato, you don't want to hang on too long, right? So you want to pass it to the next person, they might pass it back to you. You want the exact same thing on LinkedIn. All you want is someone to reply to you 4 or 5 times. Because then you know that they're interested, but also you're learning more information.
Right.
And it just should be a short question. And so like often I'll look at someone's profile and I'll see that they're posting, but they're using all the wrong techniques, et cetera. And I'll go back to them, you know, what's your key focus? And they'll say, you know, getting more clients or blah, blah, blah. And I'll say, okay, great. I said, you know, how important is LinkedIn in your overall marketing mix? And then they'll come back. So you're just constantly asking open hot potato questions, and then that there'll be an opportunity to say, you know, would you be open to a call? You never give them the link straight away and use the word open. Open is one of the best words ever invented. That gives them the choice. And it's amazing just one word, the difference it makes. So there are all the things that we've learned on how do you build those relationships off the back of people that have already viewed your post, they've already liked and commented. And now it's like, okay, so let's take this further.
I love it. There's so much more we can get into. Unfortunately, we're going to run out of time, but I think that you could add so much value to so many people. And the program that you have is reasonable in cost and the value is so much there. So the best way to get people to get in touch with you is through buildlivegive.com, correct? Buildlivegive.com?
Yes.
And I think if anybody goes to the website, and we'll make sure we put that in the show notes, people are going to see the value there, get in touch with Paul, and see what he's doing. Because you know what? He can help you guys create a pod of people that are like-minded, that have similar viewpoints, that are going to be able to get you out to the same type of people that you're looking to meet and be able to build those relationships. And they do amazing things that way. So, Paul, here's the last question I ask everybody before they walk out the door on my show. When you leave a meeting or you hang up for a call or you finish up an appointment and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
Great question. So for me, it's living my brand values, right? And my brand values help someone build their business. So is Paul there to help me really build my business? The second is you build your business to fund your lifestyle. So once again, is Paul really understanding what lifestyle I want to live and is he helping me get that? And then the last one is the give, you know, how do you give back? So once you've built a great business, you've got your right lifestyle, how do you give back to others and how's Paul contributing to that? So, you know, I really want people to think, is Paul living his brand values, but also is he helping me live the same values?
Help me help you. You know, I think that you live that day in and day out is how do I help the people that I work with be better? I love that about you, Paul.
And that profile, so I've got 5 tips on how to improve your LinkedIn profile that I mentioned earlier. You just go to blgdownload.com and they can get that as well, Ben.
So blgdownload.com.
Yes.
Perfect. We'll make sure we get that in the show notes as well. Excellent. Paul, thank you for being such an amazing guest. You have provided more than your share of value today. Thank you for everything that you've done.
Thanks for having me on, Ben. It's been an absolute blast.
Cheers.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, We help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?